Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today's discussion will be particularly insightful for financial institutions, payment associations, and fintechs, because today we're discussing the North American ACH Association's new risk management framework. We're joined by Michael Hurd, Senior Vice President of ACH Network Administration at NACHA, as well as Mercator Advisory Group's own Sarah Garrata, Director of Debit and Alternative Payments Advisory Services. Mike and Sarah discuss NACHA's new risk mitigation framework, how the framework could impact future actions for banks and fintechs, as well as offer useful real-world guidance for banks approaching risk mitigation strategies. Lastly, this framework is available for download from NACHA or at the bottom of the corresponding article that goes with this podcast on paymentsjournal.com. Without further ado, let's take you to the show. So Mike, NACHA just released its new risk management framework. Tell us what it is and what's new about it.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, we just issued a report on our new ACH risk management framework. Really what we're trying to do is call attention to and point out a change in emphasis around how the industry and individual participants identify and prevent fraud. And these are newer types of frauds that result in the use of credit payments being made out of bank accounts. So credit push might be a way that people understand these payments. And this is in contrast to debit payments and prior focus on how to have industry and individual controls around debit origination in ways that those have potentially been fraudulent in the past. But now we're really dealing with scenarios like business email compromise, impersonations like vendor impersonation or payroll impersonation or even account takeovers, where ultimately the fraudsters are trying to have money sent out from bank accounts, often where the account holder is the one acting to push the money out rather than withdrawing or debiting money out of an account. So it's really a fundamental change in the nature of how fraud is being executed, and it calls for a fundamental change in the industry's approach to it and how to address it and how to have a comprehensive plan at an industry level for addressing it.
You know, Michael, I just started reading the framework that you published, and honestly, I haven't gotten all the way through it. There's a lot of good detail in there, but you know, I think it's very timely because we are certainly seeing growth in these types of transactions. And, you know, with transaction growth comes the fraud that accompanies it. So, you know, when I think of these types of transactions, you know, I think of some of the most frequent use cases, you know, primarily around consumers agreeing to move money from their account to the account of, you know, another consumer or business. So, you know, we see certainly a lot of this type of money movement happening in P2P apps. And, you know, a couple things come to mind why I think, you know, this fraud is just so challenging for financial institutions. You know, first of all, you know, these push payments aren't necessarily going across a single payment rail. You can use different payment types to execute these types of transactions. And inside of a financial institution, you know, they may be managed by different groups or different departments. And also I think about the nature of the transactions themselves. So, you know, when one of these transactions goes bad, we have to remember that, you know, these transactions were actually authorized by the consumer, authorized by the individual executing the transaction. So, you know, when there is fraud, the financial institution has either maybe caught that individual in a little bit of friendly fraud, or, you know, the consumer has been duped by criminals. And, you know, neither one of those scenarios is, you know, a fun conversation to have with your customer.
Well, that's right. I think your points are well made there, Sarah. The frauds themselves that we're talking about here are not, you know, quote unquote payment fraud. In most cases that we're referring to here, the payments themselves are authorized as opposed to an unauthorized debit where the payment itself is the fraud. Here, you know, we have inducements or schemes like business email compromise. And, you know, a business, you know, pushes money out as a result of falling for that type of scam. So, it is fundamentally different in nature and it does cross across payment rails. It's not unique to ACH. Those who are in the wire business, push to card, payment apps like Zelle, RTP and soon to be FedNow. This is going to be, you know, frauds in common and scenarios in common that we have across all those different kinds of payment rails. And so many of the types of initiatives or strategies or, you know, solutions that we develop are also going to be applicable across all of those different payment rails.
So Mike, one of the biggest themes in the paper is a change in approach to focus on financial institutions that receive these credit payments. As you point out in the media release, these institutions should have an active role in fraud detection and prevention recovery, since they're often in the best position to identify potential fraudulent credit payments sent to accounts, you know, at their own institution. Curious if you can discuss the new approach and kind of where it came from.
Yeah, Ryan, that is a fundamental theme in this report. And again, it signifies kind of a fundamental change in how fraud should be addressed and managed. You know, all these types of scenarios that we're talking about and the use of a push payment, the funds are being directed into an account at a receiving institution. And so frequently it's that receiving institution that might be in the best position to be able to identify that deposit, that inflow of funds is irregular or suspicious or fraudulent in some manner. They're often in the best position to determine that as opposed to the sending institution. And generally when we in the past have dealt with, you know, debit origination fraud, we focused on the origination side. They're the ones allowing the payments into the system, and the receiving institutions are generally passive in that regard. But, you know, again, I would say that, you know, call out the fundamental difference in the flows around a credit payment and a debit payment. And here we think there is a need for the receiving institutions to have an active role. You know, I think, you know, we'll start out by developing industry best practices for receiving institutions and what we think they should be aware of and doing. And, you know, as an industry collectively, we can move forward and make a decision about whether there should be some requirements or other obligations that receiving institutions would have. I would say also that receiving institutions should be doing something currently to comply with anti-money laundering regulations and their responsibilities there. So, you know, I would think receiving institutions are not in the position today where they're, you know, completely, you know, not doing anything in that regard. But I think our understanding and view in the development of this project is that function can sometimes be very siloed. You know, there's a function of identifying suspicious transactions and filing SARs with FinCEN. And, you know, what else happens with it? I think another theme from this report is that there should be more of a cultural change in the industry so that financial institutions share information with one another. And, you know, that could be anything from sharing information about suspicious transactions to education around, you know, what are the common fraud scenarios and who's figured out something effective that can be done about them, or other types of connectivity platforms that would enable the financial institution counterparties to a transaction to be able to resolve it directly with one another.
You know, I think what this framework does is it's really an industry call to action, if you will, around this type of fraud. And, you know, I like the idea that there is some sort of collective responsibility that institutions have around these transactions. And I would like to see, you know, if I could wave the magic payments wand, that the industry does sort of coalesce, you know, around this and creates a thoughtful approach. It would be great if that happened with the organizations and the individuals who are most familiar with these types of problems and these mm-hmm. types of payments, so that they, because they're in the best situation to address the issue. Let's get this accomplished within the industry rather than waiting for regulatory bodies to be prescriptive in what they think the industry should be doing.
I think that's an excellent point, Sarah. And certainly as Notch, as a rulemaker for the ACH system, you know, we would always prefer to self-regulate and when necessary, adopt rules and do so in a way and at a time where, you know, issues or topics don't need to be addressed with law or additional regulation on institutions.
Yeah. Or penalties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Mike, as you've stated, this is a framework. Mm-hmm. What changes can financial institutions expect, and what would be the process for those changes?
Well, yeah, this is a framework report, so it's an early stage. I think the way Sarah described it as a call to action is maybe even better than how I've described it. But we certainly are trying to elevate the points of emphasis and calling out the change of approach and just the fundamental differences between, you know, prior risk management approaches and what we see the current need to be. So one, it's really just pushing that out, disseminating that out to the industry, educating the industry on those areas of emphasis. And, you know, starting the broad dialogue is really the early stage. And then moving on to a phase of developing new guidance or new best practices for participants in the industry for any and all roles in the payment system, and really starting to educate on, you know, what are the things that any participant could do, including those receiving institutions we talked about. What could anybody in the payment chain do now, you know, without waiting for a rule or a regulation, but are things in common that anybody could go forth with and adopt, or even just to learn about what those things could be. So I think those are the things in the near and intermediate term. Of course, as we move through this process, there will be topics or items or initiatives where it seems that, you know, the next step beyond industry guidance is to, you know, go out and propose a rule, something that would be expected to be required, complied with, that would apply to all of the participants in the industry, that we're going to, you know, kind of elevate the floor, the minimum acceptable level of action, and, you know, adopt an industry rule. So that would be, you know, in next steps even beyond that.
So Mike, as credit push fraud continues to be an issue even before any specific new rules are proposed or adopted, what can financial institutions do, sort of some of those education, dialogue, guidance mm-hmm. ideas, what can they do to help businesses and consumers prevent being a fraud victim?
Yeah, I think any financial institution could have a customer fraud education program today or tomorrow, let's say. I think many of the banks that are involved in Zelle have really been active in that space. I've seen a lot of that customer education. I've been the receiver of much of that myself. So I, you know, tip my cap to those banks in that arena. I think, you know, banks that have corporate customers, many of the ones who are targeted by BEC or vendor impersonation, you know, to really be active in having a thorough and proactive customer fraud education program is something that everyone can do even without waiting to be told to. You know, the Association for Financial Professionals, in their most recent fraud report, they continue to identify business email compromise as the single greatest threat or threat vector to businesses in the payment space. But oftentimes, you know, we'll hear, or our financial institutions will hear, that many businesses don't take action to avail themselves of fraud prevention tools or to even develop and access internal reporting until they have been victimized or at least targeted for some of these types of frauds. In other words, they don't get interested in the what can I do until they've been a victim. And so I think that's another area culturally where we need to push the industry to change, right? I think everybody can take an action today to, you know, try to not be a victim, you know, and sort of make that culturally make that part of your day-to-day work and operations, and do that before you've been hit.
You know, when I talk to financial institutions, I think it's interesting that I hear about a wide spectrum of responses to this type of fraud. You know, I hear some financial institutions that see the fraud with these credit transactions and they want to shut them down completely. They're not certain exactly what the response should be, so they want to just shut them down, which I'm not sure is the right response, simply because, right, you know, these transactions, they're just a part of sort of the evolution of payments and the digitization mm-hmm. of payments. And so I'm not really sure that that's a viable option. But then on the other side, I do see some financial institutions, you mentioned some of the consumer education. You know, I'm also hearing about some FIs that will put warnings in front of their users, maybe a pop-up window that notifies the user, hey, you're sending money, you're going to credit somebody that you've never credited before. You know, are you sure that you want to do this? Do you know this individual? So, you know, I think some of those things can really be effective, and I hope that will we'll be investing in more of those types of solutions.
I think that has some, that can be helpful, especially with preventing just errors more than, let's say, falling victim to fraud. You know, if you've been convinced to send a payment and your provider says, are you sure you want to do it? More than likely, you're going to say, yeah, sure, I want to do it, right? I think that's kind of the thing we're trying to deal with and overcome here. But I think it's fair to say, though, that heed warnings, right? If your bank or other service provider is warning you, then take a second look before you follow through and execute. So, I mean, that's just another step, you know, to put it in your daily processes, you know, just thinking out loud here. But, you know, I think with some of the cases we've heard of, if you've never sent, you know, a $3 million wire to a, you know, bank in Omaha, Nebraska before, you know, does that look normal to be doing it now? Or if you're a, you know, a healthcare company that, and this was the subject of an FBI alert recently, but if you're a healthcare company, you know, why are you sending a $3 million payment to a consumer account at a credit union? I think there are some factors like that, some parameters that should be things that could be checked when, you know, you're making that warning, right? Are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to complete this? Something about this looks anomalous to us. And maybe my last point on this would be, I certainly think that's an area the industry could develop and do better at, is anomaly detection, specifically around some of those types of parameters about, you've never sent a credit to this type of institution before, or to this type of account before, or in this quantity before, or in this velocity before. So that looks abnormal. You know, understand, figure out what's going on before you say, yes, I really want to do that.
Awesome. Well, Mike and Sarah, thank you so much for a detailed conversation around fraud prevention and Notch's new framework.
Well, thank you. This is just step one for us on this journey. So there'll be a lot more to come.